And thank you for tuning in to this episode of Wild Virginia Virtual Coffee Talk. I'm your host, Katie, and today I have the pleasure of hosting Dr. Eric Roy. He's the founder of HydroVive, and I'm really excited to get into the conversation because he posts a ton of content about water issues and particularly PFAS, which is Wild Virginia's newest campaign. And while this isn't a new issue per se, it's certainly one that's growing more in terms of media attention and folks sort of getting more involved about the issue. So I'm really excited to dive into the conversation. But before we do, Eric, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And so I love hearing about people's backgrounds and sort of their journey. So tell us a little bit about your background and what HydroVive does.
Oh, sure. So I'm a chemist by training. So I did an undergrad degree in chemistry, and then my PhD research focused on materials chemistry and aquatic chemistry. And I've been doing the research, applied research startup game since 2008, 2009. HydroVive is kind of my newest or my most recent venture, where what we do is we make water filters for people's homes that are actually optimized to filter the contaminants found in their water. And then we sell them on the internet. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so HydroVive was featured on Shark Tank, I believe, which is pretty cool. I feel like I'm talking to a famous person.
It was fun. And it was almost 5 years ago to the day when we aired. It was April 2019 is when we aired.
Wow. And I mean, that's pretty incredible. And so, you know, hearing about your background, I mean, it totally makes sense. And Wild Virginia, we were actually recently in this past legislative session, a part of a bill that would actually put together sort of a committee of researchers, of scientists, of toxicologists, and some with academic backgrounds in these subjects to really tackle some of these water issues. And so I have an inkling that that's a little bit of the reason why you started the company, but tell us about your motivations there.
Yeah. So, you know, HydroVive was a side project. It was started as a side project back in 2015, right? And if you look at what was happening in 2015, that was kind of the early phases of media attention for the Flint lead crisis. So like when City of Flint changed the water supply, you know, it ended up releasing a lot of lead into the water. And HydroVive really kind of got off the ground as like this charitable side project where I was building, you know, high capacity lead removal filters and donating them to families and like daycares and stuff in Flint. Once Flint was starting to get more media attention and more kind of stuff was more relief was flowing into Flint, kind of shelved the company because again, it was never really supposed, it was a side project, right? And I ended up picking up again, hired my first employee in 2018. And, you know, we aired on Shark Tank in 2019 with the concept of making water filters that are optimized for everyone's filter, for everyone's water, in the same way that we were kind of designing water filters to handle the lead levels in Flint's water. And, you know, it turned out there's some commercial success there. But yeah, it started really, you know, as a nights and weekends side project where money was flown in one direction. It was me donating water filters.
Right. Well, I mean, that's pretty freaking cool. And I know that like a lot of these issues, obviously Flint was a big one, but I mean, these issues kind of span across our country. And, you know, there are a lot of myths associated with water. You know, we have stakeholders that work within our legislative process that I think kind of push these narratives that we try to bust the myths on. So let's talk about the filters that HydroVive creates. And I know that I've spoken with folks that do like a full water filtration system. And in today's economy, like for a lot of homeowners, that's not really sustainable, or I mean, certainly not for me. I just don't have like thousands of dollars sitting around to put a full water system in. So let's bust the myth on why maybe you don't need a full one.
Well, if you have a full one, if we're talking whole house, they're otherwise known as point of entry filters, you got to remember those filters actually have trade-offs, right? If you think about kind of your home water usage, only a tiny amount of your water actually goes in your mouth. So the rest of it needs to flow at very high flow rates and massive volumes and stuff like that. So when you look at the whole house filters, they usually don't have the same level of filtration as the point of use water filters. Things like Hydrevive makes them, or reverse osmosis, or things like that. So I think a lot of people are surprised when they drop 8, 10 grand on a whole house filter to learn that it doesn't quite do the job that they necessarily thought. I think a lot of people, there's a myth out there that like if your water is quote filtered, then you're good to go. Whereas it's actually a lot more complicated than that, right? It's like, does your filter, if you have lead in your water, does your filter remove lead? Whole house filters generally don't. Same thing with a lot of PFAS. Like a lot of the whole house systems don't actually do that. So it's just, understanding what you're hoping to get out of a water filter and then choosing the right one.
Right. And I mean, in today's business, it's obviously really on the user or individual to kind of do this research and see what makes most sense for them. Because, some companies may claim, like you're saying, like they filter out a certain thing, but maybe that's not necessarily what your water needs. So let's talk about the PFAS issue. And
Sure.
like I said, it's nothing new. I mean, these things, these facilities that discharge it into our water, they've been doing it. Maybe they're not collecting data on it. These products that everybody's using, we've been gaining, ex having exposure to PFAS for a number of years. But why do you think it's been so kind of under the radar?
Well, legislation for water quality is slow. So even if it kind of had the nationwide attention that it does now, legislation's very, very slow. I mean, if you think about it, you think back to the Hollywood blockbuster Erin Brockovich, right? Like that raised massive awareness about chromium 6, and chromium 6 still is not regulated by the EPA, even though there was a Hollywood blockbuster over 20 years ago starring Julia Roberts, right? So it's more than just awareness that drives these things. It takes time. In the case of PFAS, a lot of it, if you look at the way that regulatory is set up in the US, you're allowed to develop chemicals and products before proving that they're safe, which is different fundamentally than the way that like Europe does it. Like in Europe, you need to demonstrate that it's safe before it can come into, consumer goods. In the US, it's the other way around. So when you look at PFAS, it's this really, they are useful chemicals, right? They repel both water and oil, which is a very unique property of these things. So these are useful products. The toxicity, as we're learning more recently, has been known for a very long time. That's the disappointing part about all this is, we're learning through whistleblowers and stuff like that, that the companies that produce these things have known for a very long time that they were toxic, and they are toxic, and they are harmful, and they just kind of kept a lid on it. When you look at kind of the way that this awareness kind of comes out, is it comes out in the academic literature first, where they're looking at, okay, these things are showing signs of toxicity, and from that point forward, that's when they get public awareness, and then you get the media labeling them as forever chemicals, and that's, I think, when people have really started to relate to these things, because aquatic chemistry is it's complex. It's the regulatory structures are also complex, so it just takes a long time. And I wish it would go a lot faster, but this is the way it is. So you got to play within those rules.
Well, and you mentioned Erin Brockovich. I mean, in 2019, the Dark Waters came out. So I think that's another reason why there is more awareness around this issue. And just for listeners, if you haven't seen the content on our website, like some of the things associated with PFAS exposure, and we talk a lot about what the wildlife is experiencing, which human drinking water, obviously important. It's associated with different types of cancers and reproductive issues. But I mean, same for wildlife. And I think about all of those complications. And gaining awareness, I think, is also tough with some of these issues because a lot of the times, some of these like plants or facilities are located in like rural, sort of economically vulnerable areas. And so you see the sort of cancer clusters, and it's hard to gain awareness on those when it's, and then we talk about environmental justice and neither here nor there, but we talk about this legislative process just kind of being so slow. And so help us understand why some states just don't have any protections against this stuff.
Well, I think in the case of PFAS, like, look, I would love for action to always go faster, right? I'm an environmentalist at heart. I really want to protect this stuff. But if you look at what's happening right now at the federal level, it's going faster than I've ever seen it go for any other contaminant ever. Okay. So what's happening is some states are saying we're not willing to wait for the federal government to do something. So they're being proactive in putting their own protections in place because the states are allowed to do that. So, you know, I applaud the states that are doing it. And I think some of the states that are choosing not to do it, you know, there's a number of different reasons why they're doing it. One is they just don't want to be out of step with the federal government. One is once you put a regulatory limit on something, the municipalities are actually responsible for delivering at that. And it's politically really difficult for the states and the local governments to be like, okay, we have this new PFAS regulation in it, and your water plant isn't set up to actually meet it, and you need to now go raise X tens of millions of dollars to meet that, and you got to go to your tax base to do it. And that's not something a lot of politicians really want to do. So, you know, that's just obviously one example of why it's not happening at the state level, but I applaud the states that have taken that step and they're saying, no, we're not willing to wait for the federal government on this. We have sufficient information and confidence to move forward with our own regulations, and they're doing it. And you know, I tend to applaud the folks that are taking that step. There's a lot of different types of regulations that can happen. One is on discharge, one is on what's actually coming out of the tap. So
Well, and that's a great point. Like, there are different protections depending on the state you live in. And I mean, Wild Virginia, that's kind of the issue that we're focusing on is, you know, let's tackle the system when it comes to discharging, particularly for the wildlife issue, discharging into our streams and rivers and, you know, all the tributaries within Virginia. And it's honestly really scary because a lot of these facilities aren't required to collect this data. And so that's something we're trying to engage the DEQ on. But there are some facilities that do, and they've just kind of handed over the data to us, which, we don't know where these facilities are. We don't know if you live close to one. And so let's talk about we're all about mobilizing citizens and really making them feel confident that they can help to get involved in more of this grown-up work. So would you have any ways that citizens can get more involved in advocating for a cleaner water surrounding the PFAS issue, and then obviously preventing further exposure for them and their families?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's awareness. Like, if you look at what drives legislation, it's when you apply pressure on your elected officials. So figure out who they are, where they stand on it, and let them know how you feel. I think most politicians want to hear that, and the ones that don't, you know, too bad. Like, you can still contact them, right? They're your elected officials. You can tell them exactly what you want. I think a lot of the current legislation focuses on drinking water standards. So if you want to expand that scope beyond drinking water standards and kind of talk about wildlife, just do it. You can also form nonprofits. You can form advocacy groups that align with nonprofits. There's no limit to like what you're able to do. I mean, social media is so powerful, right? So if you're good at that, just get the word out, you know? And it's easier now to do these type of things because of technology. There's so little. The barriers are so low right now. Anyone can stand up an Instagram campaign. And just the way that we met, right, was, I believe, through either Instagram or Twitter, right? So it's like you actually have direct access to other people in a different part of the country that have the same mission as you. And just take advantage of that. You know, I think a lot of people, I think it's kind of human nature to kind of, I don't know how to say it, but like to wait for a perfect solution in order to take the first step. And I'm just a huge advocate for, you know, have a bias for action. Take that first step and see where step two takes you, you know, and just get involved.
You know, Eric, I'm totally about that as well. Like, strategy is something I'm not very good at, but I'm really good at tactical. Let's get some stuff done. And I think with these issues, that's totally true. Like, there it is so complicated and convoluted. And so, like, taking that first step is really important to see what the path actually looks like forward. And so I really appreciate you joining me for this chat. I mean, it's a really incredible issue. It's one that I only just learned about since Wild Virginia has started to work on it. So I really appreciate the content that you're putting out about it. And yeah, like you said, we met online because you were posting content on PFAS. And so please tell everyone where they can follow you and maybe tease to some recent content that's kind of your favorite.
Sure. So I, you know, the content that I put out is mostly on Instagram and the handle is at Eric Roy PhD. And through that, that's kind of where I collaborate with other nonprofits or companies and stuff like that, that kind of share kind of that same thing. And if you want to follow my company Hydrovive on Instagram, that's where we're most active. It's at Hydrovive_H2O. We both post water quality content that's based on science and things like that. So that's the best place to find our stuff.
Awesome. Well, and yeah, listeners, you can also search Dr. Eric Roy on, you can probably find him on YouTube doing Q&As with a number of people. And so thanks again, Eric, for joining me. For listeners, please get involved. Please contact your elected officials. We can help you figure out who those are. And for more information on PFAS and other water quality issues in Virginia, you can visit www.wildvirginia.org. The current states that have PFAS protections in place include Alaska, Arizona, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Illinois, Iowa, Kentucky, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Rhode Island, Vermont, and West Virginia. As you can see, Virginia is not currently on the list. This podcast is brought to you by Illumin Collect, who make cozy outdoor-inspired apparel while donating a portion of each sale to nonprofits that make the outdoors more accessible, sustainable, and welcoming. Learn more at www.illumincollect.com.